And how are things in Glasgow these days?
Well, we've only just arrived, so I mean, we don't live here anymore. I don't know if you know that, but I haven't lived, well, we haven't lived, me and William, in Glasgow for nearly 40 years now. We left in 1985, and
Okay.
we don't come back as often as we used to because everybody's either dead or left. So,
I was going to ask you if it had changed much, but that kind of sums it up there.
it's kind of it's all changed for the better, I think.
Oh.
I mean, it was a bit sort of down at heel when we lived here. There was a lot of shabbiness, a lot of crumbling buildings, quite a lot of crime and deprivation. But it seems to have picked itself up, and it seems to be a much more interesting place
Oh, well, that's all
to
right.
be.
Very good. And you recorded the album there at Mogwai's studio, right?
We partially recorded, mostly recorded it there, and we're going to be going back there today because we are rehearsing for our tour in that
Oh, okay.
studio,
All right, that's
and we're rehearsing there, and we've got a little gig in Glasgow on Tuesday, so
right. Kind of like a warm up for the tour and
pretty much, yeah. I
yeah.
mean, we were going to warm up in Leeds,
Right.
and then. And it, there was, as it turned out, there was no Glasgow gig planned, and it was just an Edinburgh gig. And then I got a barrage of emails and text messages, all complaining about what the fuck? The album's called Glasgow Eyes, and you're not even playing here. So we had to slot in a Glasgow gig double quick.
There is a good point to be made there. Yeah, Mogwai was just here in Auckland. They played here about down the street last week, I think it was. So,
Oh.
do you know those guys, or why did you select the studio?
Well, we bumped into them from time to time. Our manager, David McBride, he managed Mogwai for years and years. He doesn't anymore, but he's still very friendly with them. And so we were looking for somewhere to finish off the album, and David says, "I think you'll be very comfortable in the Castle of Doom." So
We're out. Yeah, of course.
We were doomed, and that was it. It was a very good fit for us. So, job done.
Was your previous album recorded there as well?
No, that's the first time that we've ever been to
Okay.
that studio.
So, and the previous one came out like what, 7 years ago, so.
Yeah, that was recorded at the producer's place, Youth, the
Oh, Youth,
producer.
yeah. He's with the Killing Joke, right?
He was, yeah, and he's produced just about everybody ever since.
Yeah. So did you self-produce this new album, you and your brother?
We did. We have produced all of our records. The only time that we've ever used producer was Damage and Joy with Youth,
Right.
and that was just an experiment because we hadn't been making records for quite a long time, and we thought maybe having a well, also, we thought having a producer in the studio might help keep the tension down, if you get my drift.
Right.
Because the previous record, Monkey, was like the band more or less disintegrated during the making of that record.
Right.
So we thought, a producer could act as a kind of a referee, if you know what I mean, or a peacekeeper. So, and it kind of worked out that way, because you've got this other guy, this kind of authority figure, if you like, in the studio. And he was pretty good at that. When it started to get heated, he would come, "Oh, settle down, boys, settle down." And
Right,
you'd kind of think, "All right, we're being a bit childish. Let's just make the record."
So were there any moments like that making this record?
There always is, but we've learned how to not go too far, if you like, these days. I mean, it got as bad as I think hopefully it ever will get in the late 90s. And we, we are terrible from not learning from our mistakes. But on that occasion, or with that situation, we actually did learn how to not rub each other up the wrong way, at least too far. We will always argue. We are brothers. There's a lot to argue about. But we know now where that line in the sand is, and we can attempt to sort of like approach it. And then when we get there, back off, because if you go up over that line, I remember from the 90s that there are things that were said that were best not said. And
Right.
once you've said, they can't be taken back. So
Yep.
there you go.
I was just listening to a new album by another band of brothers, the Black Crowes, who are kind of back together again, and they've had their ons and offs through the years. Is that a brother thing? Have you ever kind of swapped stories with other brother bands, the Davey Brothers or anybody like that?
And I haven't really sort of discussed that with any other rock and roll brothers, but we don't really run into that many people, to be honest with you. I know I can understand. I recognize a lot of the pitfalls. I've seen it watching the Gallagher brothers.
Oh, there
You
you
could
go.
see it. It was like it was like watching me and William all over again, but on a bigger stage, I suppose. So
Yeah.
totally got it all. And McGee always said, he was totally prepared to deal with the Gallaghers because he'd already been through it once with me and William.
Right.
And I believe that that would have been very helpful to how he dealt with those two.
Right. So you guys kind of celebrated your 40th anniversary of being a band recently as well. So does that give you pause to think back and reconsider or consider your legacy, what you would have done differently, better, worse? How does it sit with
Well,
you?
I mean, yes, but I mean, at the same time, when you've been around this long, you do tend, when you've been making music this long together, and there have been a lot of mistakes, not musical mistakes, but a lot of mistakes in with regards to how we treated each other and all of the, very public rows and what have you. So you kind of reflect on that anyway. But I suppose being back in Glasgow, making this record, also, we're doing a book, which is not quite an autobiography. It's just us talking to a journalist,
Right.
doing many interviews, but basically raking through the band's history and
Are you doing the
progress
interview separately or together?
separately.
Interesting.
It's done. It's done. The interviews are done. The book is more or less ready to go to press. It's not coming out till later in the summer, I think.
Right.
But and anyway, so and it deals mostly with the early period of the band. It goes up to the 1990s breakup, and then it maybe there's a little bit about what we did afterwards.
Gotcha.
But that was kind of weird, like going through quite in detail, in depth, all of those stories, all of those, crazy nights and crazy days, and it does tend to make you kind of dwell on it a bit. And yeah, I think, well, what could we have done? Like, I mean, the night at the House of Blues where the band broke up in 1998, I've raked over that evening
Yeah.
probably about 1,000 times, trying to think of did it really need to go down that way? And I really don't think it did, but fuck it, it's all done now, you can't undo it.
That's a fact. That's a fact. So let's get to the record, Glasgow Eyes. From your point of view, does it have a particular sound? Has the I've listened to it a few times. It has a little bit more electronic stuff going on it, and to my ears, but there's still plenty of fuzzed out guitars, which is what we need.
Well, I mean, we don't. When we make a record, generally, the general rule is that we don't try and kind of decide beforehand what it's going to sound like. But on this occasion, what we did say was that we were going to get synthesizers involved a bit more heavily than we've used before. I mean, there's nothing on this record that we had sonically that we haven't done before. We've
Right.
used Moog synths, we've used drum machines. But
Sure.
on this record, we've done that, but a little more so. It's more electronic than I think most people would expect the Mary Chain to be, but fuck it, that's what we felt like doing.
There you go. And it opens up with a tune called Venal Joy. So, why is that? Why have you chosen that to kick things off with this record?
Well, it just kind of sets the tone pretty nicely, I think. It's upbeat. It's got that electronic sound. And and if you kind of get over that, then you'll be with it for the rest of the album, I think. If you hear that and think, "Fuck, turn that off," then the album's not for you.
Gotcha, gotcha. And you have a tune called American Born, which is an interesting title for a couple of guys from where you're from. Believe it or not, I'm English born, but I have an American accent, so I'm kind of interested in all of that. What's behind the song from your point of view?
Well, it's William that wrote the words. So William lives in America, and I guess it's just his perspective as an outsider, but living in America. Like he lives with Americans. You know, I mean that's what it's about, I guess.
Have you seen that affect him in any way? Is
Well, sort of. I mean, like, you know, obviously, you know, for most of his life. He's actually lived in America now for more than, let me see now, 23, 24 years, something like that. And so, yeah, I mean, so he tends to talk a lot about what's going on in the United States rather than, you know, he's maybe perhaps a bit out of touch with British politics or what have you. Although he does keep in touch, but he'll rant for hours about, you know, Trump or something like that. Or, you know, how is it possible that Trump could have been president and looks like could be president again? So things like that, you know.
You got to wonder. Are you guys fairly political animals? I noticed in Silver Strings, there was kind of lyrics about rockets and nuclear submarines and things like that. Is that a part of, do you guys talk about that stuff? Whether it should be part of the music?
But politics and music, I think, don't really go well together. Political, yeah, but that's more on a personal level, I think. I think when bands try to change the world with a song, it kind of always falls flat in its face. I mean, I'll talk politics all day if you want me to, but not in a song.
Gotcha. And you have a song just before that called the Eagles and the Beatles. So it's classic rock all over the place there. I think you mentioned it, but it seems to be mostly about the Rolling Stones, and there's a great riff in it. And you mentioned the Faces. So what brought that on? I got to figure that's coming from you with the riff.
Well, that's William again. I mean, it's just him talking about our childhood, I think, and the music that got us that got us into music and got us into being in a band. You know, that's what it is. I mean, it reminds me of when me and him were young, listening to music, getting turned onto the Pistols and all of that. Or he got laid, Sex Pistols. You know, he didn't actually, but never mind.
All right. And then there's another song called Second of June, which is kind of self-referential. And music-wise, it kind of goes into this kind of drony thing a little bit more than we hear on the earlier in the album. Did you think about the musical journey, as it were, from beginning to end and bringing you up to that point?
Well, we're not, you don't really sort of analyze your own music to that degree, I think. I
I
mean,
think some
Second of
people do,
June,
actually.
oh, really, do they? Well, I don't like to. I mean, I
Gotcha.
can talk a little bit about it. It was, it's a song in the very first verse I'm singing to William, not my mother. In the second verse, I'm singing to my brother. And the song's called The Second of June. My mother's name was June, and I'm her second child. So there you go.
Oh, there you go. Oh, that explains it a lot. And it sounds like almost like a Farfisa organ sound on the following trick on Girl 71. But I don't think
Girl
it is,
71.
probably.
There's that. We're trying to do that kind of won't get fooled again. But I mean, it's all out there for grabs, you know.
And I gotta say, I love the title of the Hey Lou Reed, but it's spelled Reed as in your Reed. So just having a bit of fun there, or what?
Man, why not? Why not?
Right,
I
right.
mean, Lou was a he was hugely influential to us. So, and REID, we made him ours, really. We took Lou Reed and kept him under the bed somewhere.
Right. Did you ever have any interaction with him? He's a mercurial character. Some people have great things to say about him, others not so great.
Well, I could have met Lou Reed, but I chose not to. I'm incredibly shy, first of all, but Lou
Really?
Reed, man, how terrifying is that? And I know his reputation. But we were in a festival in Scandinavia in the 1990s, and it was one of those ones where everybody was hanging around the hotel bar afterwards. And we had the same agent, the same booking agent, and Andy, the agent, came up. He said, "Come on, I'll introduce you to your Lou." And I was like, "Ah, no way, no way." And he's going, "What's wrong?" And I was like, "Oh, I couldn't do that. I'm just too scared, too meek, too timid." So I declined.
Right. All right.
Which I've done. I could have met almost everybody you could name, but just went, "Don't want to do that."
And what happens when the reverse happens? Because people got I know they admire you and they look up to you guys. What happens when that encounter happens on the other end?
Well, we're pussycats. Anybody that comes up to us usually walks away with a smile on their face.
Well, that's not a surprise. I remember the first time I heard your first album, Psycho Candy, and it's still the feeling still stays with me to this day. This is when it first came out, and when was it? Early 80s or whatever. And it's one of those mesmerizing, dreamlike feelings that stays with you for a long period of time. Is that what you guys have in mind in general with your music, to make that kind of impression?
Well, we want it to last. We made Psycho Candy. We didn't really see it as just entertainment for that particular year. 1985 it came out. And, if people would have tapped a toast to that in their bedsits in 1985 and then forgot about it in 1986, then that would not have been job done, because that's not how we saw it going down.
Right.
We make music to fit in with people's lives. We want people to take that music with them to wherever they're going to go next. and that's the same with any record we've made, and I guess we got it right, because we're 40 years later after, the first single was 84. So it's 40 years since starting this band. And, here we are, we're still talking about those records we made then, and we're still talking about records we're making now. So, I mean, that would have been a fantasy to me back then, that, we'd still be making records in 2024. People would still think that they were relevant, If somebody would said to me then, "You'll be making an album in 2024, I'd have thought, "Oh God, that sounds kind of embarrassing. It sounds like it's got to be awful."
Right.
But, here we are, we're making this record, and so far the reactions to it have been pretty positive. So not bad for a couple of guys in their 60s, I think.
Exactly. No. And as a guitar player, what do you do to keep yourself interested in the instrument?
Oh, I mean, I don't even consider. I play guitar, and it is for fun, but I don't really think I could never join another band as a guitarist. I'm not good enough. I couldn't even get in the Ramones for fun.
Oh no! Well, you may be right. I mean, Johnny was pretty good.
he never lost a chord, man. He was just like, he was like a machine, Johnny Ramone.
Yeah, that's interesting though. And do you see the band have an impact and an impression on any newer bands that are out and about these days?
Well, I mean, it's not really for me to say, but I'm told that we do seem we are name checked, on a regular basis, which I guess is healthy. again, back to what I was saying earlier, it was music that we made back then that we thought should last the years. And there are bands now that are forming that are name checking the Mary Chain that weren't anywhere near born when we started. So great.
Yep. That's pretty cool. And so you plan on? I know I've seen you guys a couple of times. You played the Power Station around the corner here in Auckland. So are there plans afoot to head down to this part of the world again?
There has been some talk about coming to the Antipodes. So, I mean, we want to. We like to do that, but you have to kind of fit it into. I mean, it's so isolated, Australia and New Zealand, isn't it?
It is.
And so you have to kind of tie it into an Asian trip as well, and it makes more sense. But we are talking about doing that, and we'd love to.
So you're rehearsing for these shows coming up, and you got the new album, new songs. What do you have to work on with a band?
Well, I mean, the new stuff is a bit challenging to fit that into the set. We're not going to overwhelm people with, like, twelve new songs.
Right.
I personally hate it when one of my favorite bands brings out a new album. You go and see them, they play the whole fucking thing. You think, "Oh, well, hold on, I want to hear some of the back catalog." Yeah. It's always going to be based on you know, songs that people know.
Yeah.
And then we'll do a sprinkling of the new stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Is there one song on the album you're most excited to play live?
No, I mean, all of them, I think, would sound good live. But I mean, things like, I think Vino Joy will sound real. J-A-M-C-O-D, Vino Joy, I think, will sound like they're going to be boot stompers.
All righty. Very good. All right. Well, hopefully we'll get to see you guys down here. You always go over well. So there's something about that post-punk thing in New Zealand, which kind of fits in with the whole Dunedin sound and the Flying Nun thing, that all makes sense. So, and I think part of it is what you guys do. So thank you very much. And thank you for tuning in. Good luck with everything.